Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Carolina Panthers.
Hey, yeah, relax. Yeah, take a deep breath.
Oh yeah, I'm hot.
If you really upset, bomb on me so I can go inside. Okay. You got me?
Yeah.
It's like loose in a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
I won't press no charges. You can even play the whole season. No, no game suspension, none of that.
Alright? Yeah.
I may even give you some money. Alright? I just want to make you laugh. Okay?
Cat scratch fever.
But not even, baby.
Cat scratch fever.
I can't quit now. I keep my focus, man. I keep my focus. We're gonna find out how far we can push ourselves.
Good evening, Panther fans. Welcome to another episode of Cat Scratch Radio. Jackson, your host, here to talk Carolina Panther football, and more specifically, the draft, kicking off in two nights here. So, obviously, we're going to focus on that. I see I got a number of callers out here already, a couple CSR staff members. I even see Ivan out there, so... Guys, just hold on. I'm looking for my normal sidekick here. Here he is. How's it going, Brian?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So, what's your thoughts? Number eight.
Sorry, I just called in.
Oh, okay.
Who do I think we're going to take?
Yeah, we have just now starting the show, so you actually dialed right in at the right time.
Perfect. You know, as much as I hate to say it, because I've been the guy who was talking about Leonard Fournette for the last few weeks, I'm kind of sold on Christian McCaffrey at number eight, if that's where it goes. I think Carolina may take him there.
That seems to be the trend, that's for sure. And I don't know if you saw my prop bet. I mean, when Vegas has put a prop bet on it, kind of sure. Let's put it this way: if we don't pick McCaffrey at number eight, then Dave Gettleman has put a really good smokescreen out there. Again, not sure what he's trying to hide. You know, it seems like the only player. You know, we're not looking for a quarterback, so, I mean, we're just going to take the best player left on the board, I think. I'm not sure who would jump ahead of us to get whom, maybe other than Fournette. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the only thing that makes me think that it might not be McCaffrey there is simply because we all know Dave Gettleman loves his physically superior prospects, and obviously McCaffrey is not that compared to Fournette, but... I don't know. It's just after this whole last 2 weeks or so of watching some footage and reading some evaluations, it's just that McCaffrey addresses too many things for Carolina to not take him at eight. And that's obviously if Carolina doesn't trade up or trade down, which is something where today I saw rumors indicating both could happen. So very interesting draft we have ahead of us apparently.
Yeah, I saw something to the effect that there's a rumor that Carolina's offered to trade up to number two. But the 49ers GM came out and said they have no intention of dropping back.
Right.
So that makes me wonder if it's because they're going to go quarterback.
I would think that the only – here's the thing. That information became public, and who does that really benefit? It doesn't benefit Carolina for it to be public, but it does benefit the 49ers because it shows you where the buying price is right now for that pick. So,
yeah.
And obviously, every team, I was thinking about this earlier today. Once the draft starts, you don't have a lot of time to really work out where you're going to go, what trades you might make. So realistically speaking, it makes sense to have those conversations now when the draft isn't going on. So I think a lot of that may have to do with just that Carolina may have contacted the Niners and said, hey, if Myles Garrett's there, this is what we're willing to offer. Because I just don't see them trading up for anybody other than Garrett. And I think that maybe the Niners threw out that someone in the Niners may have leaked that information to be like, hey, anybody else want to take our pick? This is what we're asking for right now. Can you beat it, basically?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think one trade back partner to not overlook now is the Bills. Because, you know, maybe the Bills and the Browns come asking, looking for the same player. Panthers, you know, and Gettleman might favor old McDermott.
Obviously, Carolina, obviously, if we can get a lot of draft picks for a guy like Mitch Trubisky, if he makes it that far, you know, that would be a really good trade for Carolina, obviously.
Yeah.
It just goes down to what value you can grab, and I think the Browns are the team that could do it if they really want to trade up and grab a quarterback, because they have the ammunition to still have that number one pick, take the best player in the draft, and then find their quarterback with some of their other picks. So I think Cleveland's the most likely to do it. That said, Buffalo is known to make some weird moves sometimes. So.
I just don't know who we'd be going up at number two to grab unless, for some reason, the Browns didn't take Myles Garrett. So, I don't know. I'm not. I like Solomon Thomas better than Garrett myself.
The only thing about Solomon Thomas that I don't like is after reading some articles, Nation is a really good guy that I like to follow because he was a former defensive lineman in the NFL. And he really questioned Solomon Thomas's effort on the field at times, and he said that the guy left a lot of sacks on the field as well due to that, and that his hands were not very good against blocks. So it's like, I don't see Carolina training up to number two to take Solomon Thomas. That said, the guy is definitely a physical specimen, but it seems like Solomon Thomas needs some work, and I don't know if Carolina would be willing to take a guy like that at number eight.
Yeah.
That's just what I've heard.
I don't know.
Draft expert.
Certainly, trading, I'm just not sure who else we would trade up for unless we were just really sold on Jamal Adams or, you know, I just can't believe the Browns would pass on Garrett, but they might. Who knows?
Yeah, the only reason that I see Carolina trading up at all is obviously for Garrett, and that's because Garrett just improves your defense right away by picking him up. Because
you
relieve the pressure on K'Wan Short as, like, the best pass rusher Carolina has on every down. You can match Mario Addison up against whoever the weakest tackle is on that team. So you end up with a situation where you can really make some chess moves on the defensive line against the other team's strengths and weaknesses, because Garrett is a guy that you could play probably most downs, and then you still have Charles Johnson, Julius Peppers, who are still going to be solid as far as rotational players go. So I just don't see a reason why you would trade up for anybody except Garrett, simply because Garrett makes the defense immediately better. Because the secondary will benefit from a stronger pass rush, the linebackers will benefit from a stronger pass rush, and Garrett's obviously the best in the draft right now as far as defensive linemen go. So he's the only guy I could see Dave Gettleman really making a move for, because he's just going to make your defense immediately better.
That makes sense. All right. Yeah, I just don't see the Browns passing on him, but they might. They could brown it up.
Yep, it's the Browns. They're always a wild card.
Let's see. Let's go ahead and round and grab a couple more people, see what they're up to. Ivan's been holding. I also see John, Goose Creek, Durst. Y'all just hold on a minute here. What's up, Ivan? I think I got Ivan on here. You got your mute on, dude?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're not talking. Ah, there you are.
Yeah, sorry. I have myself on mute. It's a fun thing.
What's going on?
No, nothing much. Just enjoying draft time. Trying to get back in the swing of things. So.
Do you have a comment you wanted to add, or are you just listening?
No, I mean, I think I'm just listening. I admittedly have not been keeping up as much with prospects and all as I should have been this year, so I'm still learning about some of these folks and just kind of looking forward to who we're going to get on Thursday.
Classic.
I mean,
classic.
Yeah,
exactly.
It reflects how I write,
well,
too. I have no idea what I'm doing. I just wing it and see what happens.
There's this cool website called Cat Scratch Reader. It's got a...
Ah, man, I have heard of that before.
With Durst Draft Digest, all you need to know is in there.
No, I plan on heavily reading that tomorrow. I honestly do, just so I'm like up on who we might be targeting. But yeah, I mean, I think honestly, you know, I'm hoping we don't take Fournette or McCaffrey. I mean, I trust whoever we would take. I have no reason not to, you know, with Getz at the helm. I have no reason not to trust whoever he takes. But honestly, I would rather see. And again, I mean, I know this may be a reach, and if you know, they're probably not even going to be there. But I'd love to see someone like Jamal Adams be taken with that eighth pick, or you know, I don't know about Cam Robinson. I haven't really heard much about him. I don't know if he's fallen down draft boards or what.
Yeah.
But,
It's funny you bring up Cam Robinson, because this is one of my bullet points I wanted to hit tonight. I was noticing today, a few days before the draft, Mike Mayock changes his thing on Cam Robinson. He had Robinson in with the guards up until this point. And even then, like the second best guard or some crap like that. And he's the only person out there. And then today, I don't know when he put this new one out here in the last few days, he's changed him to tackle, and he's the number one tackle. And it's like, what? Are you losing your mind? How do you do that this close to the draft? You know, it's like did he just finally realize that he was the only moron out there that was positive he had to kick inside to guard?
Yeah. I mean, it's just hard to trust stuff with everyone trying to get clickbait and everything around this time of year, and find new ways to rehash old topics. I mean, it's just hard to trust stuff, and it's just going to be fun to finally get to, you know, draft time and have all this stuff actually shake out the way it's supposed to. But yeah, I mean, I'm just hoping for some kind of help on that offensive line. I mean, that's, you know, I would love to have a running back that's dynamic that we would use correctly, you know, like a Fournette or like a McCaffrey. I mean, McCaffrey to me is more exciting just because of all the different things he can do, but you know, if we don't have a good offensive line, I know we have Matt Khalil now, but, you know, the more I've listened to CP talk about, you know, his concerns with Khalil and his injury history, I mean, the more I'm thinking, why wouldn't we just want to get someone who is young and who might be able to secure, you know, a left tackle or right tackle position for, you know, the next 10, 12 years? I mean, you know, it's hard to find that, and I would rather just see us do something like that than get a running back. But I don't get paid to make those decisions, thankfully. So whoever we get, I'll be happy with. Just leave it at that.
I'm sure I'll be happy with whoever we go with. I mean, I'll talk myself into it, even if it's McCaffrey. You know, Cam Robinson, it's a very – it makes a lot of sense pick. And honestly, I've really never understood why he wasn't rated higher than he is, just because he's a potential left tackle. Of course, we'd plug him in on the right to begin with, but, you know, he certainly looks like he could play the part. I just don't get it. Normally, these guys are, you know, somebody like him would be a top five pick. Hell, Laramie Tunsil, Well, they both measured out pretty well. Tunsil's a little smoother athlete, but hell, he was number one until he got caught with the bong on his head. So now that'll be interesting to see if we get any more draft night bombs like that. Somebody out maliciously trying to hurt somebody's draft stock. Shit
yeah.
worked, though. Shit did work.
I mean, Robinson's very odd because I've seen mock drafts where he goes in the top 10, and I see mock drafts where he goes in the top 10 of the second round. So it's like, it's really difficult to really project where he's going to go. I mean, it seems like he is probably the safest tackle prospect in this entire draft. What it really comes down to is how confident is Dave Gettleman in Michael Orr returning? I mean, like, I'm willing to give Gettleman the benefit of the doubt and let him work his things out with Khalil simply because he took Michael Orr, who was considered to be one of the worst tackles in the NFL. I think he was, like, the year he was in Tennessee, I believe he was, like, maybe one rank above Orr or Byron Bell as far as
his time in Tennessee was an utter – right tackle was an utter failure, there's no doubt.
But then all of a sudden he comes into Carolina in 2015 and he shores up the left tackle position. So I'm just sitting here like, well, Gettleman seems to know what he's doing there. So, and Khalil has been saying he's the healthiest he's ever been. He's got a lot of his extra motion back. And his rookie year, he was a Pro Bowl talent at tackle. So I'm willing to just sit here and say, you know what, I'll just be optimistic with Khalil. But obviously Oher is somebody where we can't really – none of us know, most likely Ron Rivera, Gettleman know better than we do whether or not Orr is going to be reliable and there for the next season. So that said, this is the kind of draft where you take a guy who is a top eight talent and just make your team better with him. So is it Robinson? Maybe. Is it McCaffrey? Could be. I mean, the guy can play multiple positions for Carolina. Could also be a guy like O.J. Howard, could be a defensive lineman. You know, I know what Dave Gettleman's going to do with the first pick is going to be just the highest impact guy.
Well, and I could also argue we have a crisis at offensive tackle, honestly.
If Orr can't come back from this concussion, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, the guy, I still don't know if he's on that list, you know, being listed on the injury report.
Yeah.
I know they don't really keep
protocol,
track of that stuff, but yeah, exactly. I mean,
him to exit at OTAs.
Well, I mean, we'll see. We expect him to exit that, you know, week 13, and here we are in, you know,
more
middle
like
of the
week 8
season,
of
so.
The season. Yeah, and it's
yeah.
So. All right, well, let's see. I'm going to get Durst on the line because he's put his final big board up there, and he's just got some interesting stuff. What's up, Durst?
Hey, nice to see you guys again. Or hear from you guys.
Yeah, man. So 2 days to go. Kicks off 8 p.m., right? Eastern?
Yeah, I think that's right.
So we're, you know, debating number 8, man. Are you buying into the McCaffrey hype?
Well, yeah. I mean, I of course, I was listening the last couple of minutes, and it's I forget which one of you said that. I think Bryant, a heck of a smokescreen if it's not really true, because there's definitely a lot of talk about the McCaffrey. I think that kind of player could do a lot for this offense because, you know, it's certainly as a running back, he's very different than the guys that are there, and as a receiver, he's very different than the guys that are there. And as a return man, he'd be a shot in the arm at that position as well. So, I probably the only thing about that is I would maybe think, okay, could we get Curtis Samuel in the second round at number 40 and get a similar player, maybe less production on the collegiate level, but with upside to be maybe just as good. And that'd probably be my only problem with the McCaffrey pick.
Yeah. My problem with the whole catching the ball out of the backfield thing is it's just not our offense. Cam's not a great passer, a short ball passer. You know, he's not Drew Brees back there throwing to the flat all the time. I guess he could be. We could try it, but I just like him better.
That's the type of, that's the type of quarterback I kind of expected him to pair up with, the Drew Brees or the Tom Brady type of player.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I finished the SBN mock draft. I haven't posted on it yet. But at number 64, I had to pick basically between running back Alvin Kamara and wide receiver Zay Jones. Which one of those two would you? Having already taken O.J. Howard and Tre'Davious White. But I took Zay Jones. Probably should have taken Kamara, actually. That's what old Dan Kadar said. Zay, I think Zay is a good pick. Fourth best wide receiver. Last pick of the second round. That's pretty good, I think. I think Tre'Davious White's going to go a lot sooner than 40. So I guess if you disagree with my O.J. Howard pick, you know, if you went McCaffrey or Fournette instead at 8, then you'd have Kamara available. I just never thought he'd be there at 64. But that's an interesting scenario. I mean, that would be a hell of a way to go. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, just kind of looking at the way I have my my value board, Alvin Kamara is the last running back in the second round that I have, and then Isaiah Jones, the second to the last wide receiver in the second round. It's basically meaning Isaiah Jones or Zay Jones is sort of one slot up in my rankings from Kamara. So it's kind of interesting that that you had to choose between the two. I think my take on it might be to go with Jones just simply because I think there's going to be some running backs later on, you know, your Kareem Hunt,
Samardzi, that was kind of my thinking,
P. Ryan.
At the time, was there was still a couple of guys there that, you know, that were more in the Fournette mold, more the, or the Stewart mold, I guess. That kid, well, Curtis Samuel was still on the board, that Donta Foreman. Mm. Was still there.
Was Samaj Perrin still on the board?
Yeah, actually, Perrin was still on the board, too.
I would have went with Zay Jones, too, then.
Yeah.
And I'm not as big of a Kamara fan as a lot of people, which is, I don't know, it probably doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. You know, he wasn't very productive at Tennessee, but then again, I'm a huge O.J. Howard fan, and he wasn't that productive in Alabama, and you know, one could kind of say that maybe, you know, the reasons was similar, that Kamara was a backup as a running back to Jalen Hurd, and then O.J. Howard just wasn't really featured in the Alabama passing game. And so really it was more or less coaching decisions or coaching philosophies, which led to each of them being, you know, underproductive. So probably doesn't make any sense. I don't like Kamara as much as some people.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at your board. I have some questions. You know, if we don't get O.J. Howard early, let's say we go defense or, you know, running back like you're thinking. This is a deep draft at tight end, and you have 7 of them in the 3rd and 4th round. And I'm just curious, you know, you've got a 3rd-round value on Gerald Everett, Bucky Hodges, this Adam Shaheen, and Jordan Leggett. And then the 4th, Jake Butt, Jeremy Sprinkle, which I've seen a lot of people mock to us, and this George Kittle, I haven't heard of him. So out of those 7, who do you think is the best fit for us that we might actually target?
Well, I'll tell you what, Kittle might be the best blocking tight end in this draft. You know, the O.J. gets that title simply because he's, you know, maybe the bigger name. And he's certainly asked to block a lot at Alabama. But in terms of actually – maybe being a little bit more of a bully in the blocking scheme, it's hard to, it may be hard to beat George Kittle. And Iowa in general, they tend to have blocking blocking tight ends. And a lot of people, a lot of the tight ends have come out historically have been good blockers and not as good of receivers. What happened to Kittle was he was injured a lot this year. He was actually really high on PFF's rankings coming into the season. But for the most part, didn't get a lot of press, didn't have a big year until the combine. He had an excellent combine. So I've actually seen some other rankings that maybe I'm even a little too low on George Kittle, even though he was kind of not really known by most people until recently. I like Jeremy Sprinkle a lot, you know, but at least I did until he stole whatever he stole at the which store was it again? Belk, yeah, the Belk Bowl. He's the one that that shoplifted at the Belk Bowl there in Charlotte, and you know, I mean, that's a pretty stupid move. So it's that part of me thought about having it a little lower in the rankings, but I sure liked him when I saw him blocking on Garrett and Deshaun Hall at Texas A&M. He's also a pretty good blocker, a pretty reliable receiver, not a dynamic athlete, but you know, pretty good value in that fourth, maybe fifth round range. Jake Butt, I mean, you know, he's of course you know, the kid that tore his ACL in the bowl game, and you know, it's questionable how much he's going to be able to play as a rookie, so that's why I have him down the fourth round. But you know, he was considered a second round pick pretty much universally. Some people had him as a late first. Some of the people that might have been down on him might have had him as a, you know, late second, early third. But for the most part, he was pretty much considered a top 50 pick until he tore his ACL. And now it's just hard to take somebody that's hurt when you got so many guys that are healthy coming into the league that can contribute day one, like Jordan Leggett and Bucky Hodges.
My only rebuttal to that would be Carolina still has Ed Dixon this year. And I would be pretty ecstatic if they walked away with Jake Butt in the third or fourth round, even the fifth round, despite his health issues, just because the guy seems like he can be, his ceiling is a lot higher than the other guys that you mentioned.
Yeah. You the pick on him to stash him for, even if it was stashing him for a year, huh? Well, good point. Well, I know when I get Goose Creek on the line, he's would probably vote for Adam Shaheen. Ashland.
Hey,
though,
Jack. I think Durst has something to say to that.
Well, no, I was just going to kind of agree. I think Carolina's one of the few teams that probably could do that. That you know, he would essentially be a third or perhaps even a fourth tight end as a rookie once he gets healthy, and then just every year kind of, you know, make his way up the rankings and eventually be the successor to
Olsen. Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
All right. Let's bring old Goose Creek in. See if what he thinks of Jake Budd or Adam Shaheen. What's up, GC?
Hi, guys.
There? Hey, man.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
You got me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Shaheen, but I think he's probably going to get overdrafted. He's been getting a lot of notice. In the mock draft, I had us either getting O.J. early or Michael Roberts late.
Roberts.
He's a big kid.
Yeah, Mike Roberts.
He's from Toledo. He played in the Shrine Bowl, and he did good enough in the Shrine Bowl that they gave him a Senior Bowl invitation. And then went to the Senior Bowl, and he showed well, especially blocking, but he's got really good hands. He's just not very fast.
Well, it's not required. Michael Roberts,
also,
okay, I see him. Yeah, fifth rounder.
Yeah, Toledo, he came out of Shrine Bowl sort of unheralded, but he did so well there, they brought him into the Senior Bowl. And he's going to be a fifth or sixth rounder, you know, somebody they pick up late if they don't get O.J. Howard early.
I was just going to say, Robert actually led all tight ends and touchdown receptions in 2016.
Yeah, like I said, he's not very fast, but he's good in the red zone where there's not a lot of room because he's strong and he's got great hands.
Yeah. possibility then. Well, what else, GC? You buying the McCaffrey hype?
Yeah, well, I was probably on it really early because I had him going to us when he was, they were saying he was like 26 or 28.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because I just had the feeling. I even sent an email to Limey saying that. So I said, when I say that later, you'll have to confirm that I'm not blowing it out of my butt. But I sent him an email about a month and a half ago saying it was going to be McCaffrey.
You're the Gettleman whisperer then, because I guess he just loves him so much he can't hide his love. And everyone's picked up on it, and now it's a prop bet. Will McCaffrey get past the Panthers? Oh, man.
I still like the way you say P. Ryan's name, too. Samaje P. Ryan.
P. Ryan. Samaje. Either him or the Foreman kid seem more like a mid-round type of running back for us.
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, when you had the everybody putting out who they had, I had two running backs down, and I put down McCaffrey. And I'm trying to remember who else I put down. It was somebody late.
In what?
Your little guess who the draft picks are.
Okay.
I might have put Kamara. He's a good all-around back. I think y'all were talking about him. I don't think Tennessee used him very much.
I might have to do an altered, because I don't think I put McCaffrey on there. Now I kind of want to.
If you put Conley on there, you might want to take him off too.
Conley?
Yeah, the cornerback from Ohio State. That.
Yeah, what happened?
They're investigating him for rape now.
Oh yeah. That sucks.
I don't know about that. I read something from NFL Draft Diamonds, and they had called pretty much everybody in the witness report there, and it kind of sounds like he's getting blackballed because he rejected some girl, to be honest. That's not like a national news source or anything, but according to him, he's been in law enforcement for about 14 years, and he called all these people, and all their stories lined up. There was no inconsistencies. There was no, you know, anything, any red flags that would indicate that they were lying. And he seems to think that the person charging him with rape is kind of lying because they know he's an NFL prospect, and that's going to drop his draft stock, even if he's not actually guilty. So take that as you will. I'm not saying that that's true or it's hard facts or anything. That's just what I read today, about an hour and a half ago.
Well, from what I've heard, I had the same inclination that it's probably a BS story. But then again, Lael Collins was getting called in to be a witness on a murder, and it dropped him out of the draft.
Yeah, no, that, like I said, like, even if it ends up being completely unsubstantiated and there's no grounds to it and ends up not working out, it'll probably still end up dropping his draft stock, which sucks for him.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, grab his ass in a sixth round like the damn Cowboys.
I think the benefit for him is that this is happening now, where it's not happening like the day of or the day before the draft, so they have some time. And apparently the investigation has been going on for the last 10 to 14 days, so there has been some time for them to clear his name, where Collins didn't really have that, unfortunately.
Yeah, the incident happened like on the 9th, April the 9th.
So supposedly he's not going to talk to police until Monday, which you know, of course is obviously after the draft. And I don't know that I'm not a lawyer or a police officer, so but it doesn't really seem to make sense. It seems like he'd want to go ahead and talk to the police and maybe try to, you know, try to see if we can get some, you know, some clarification or whatever about his story before the draft. And,
well, I just see I got Shank Diddy on the line here, and he's been waiting patiently. What's up, Shank?
Hi. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Hey.
Been a while, man.
Yeah.
Draft brought you out of your hiding,
yeah.
Huh? So following Panthers draft or Lions draft or what?
Well, this year I tried to stay in more, isolation and not buy into any prospect narratives. So when I'm starting to really catch on to what others are saying, you know, the popular mocking the draft, I call them Maylock, all these sources, it's just interesting. It's interesting how prospects can be at one place when we play football, and then we stop playing football, months go by, and then all this change. So I find that intriguing.
Yeah.
McCaffrey is really interesting to me because I look at him as a player that he's a good puzzle piece player. I don't think Carolina would be probably the best place for him. And it goes into what was alluded to earlier. And I was saying this earlier. I was like, talking to a friend of mine, I said, you know, New Orleans, Detroit, New England, teams that use multiple different looks and they try multiple different ways to attack you, even using your running backs in the passing game would be perfect for him. I think in Carolina, he kind of would be misappropriated.
Yeah.
No insult to Carolina.
Well, to me, it's similar. It's not a similar situation, just a similar kind of, I'm not sure the running back fits. You mentioned the Saints, who just signed Adrian Peterson. It seems McCaffrey would fit in the Saints offense better, while AP would fit better in ours. You know, what do you think, AP, with the Saints?
You know, I would say this. Because the guys are coaching football and they're running, you know, sports teams, sometimes sports really isn't that complicated. And they overthink things. And then this is just a case where I think they just want to have good players, and they just said to heck with the schematic fit. He's just a good player.
Yeah.
So.
And cheap.
No,
I think you 2.7?
Price?
Yeah, I mean, I think he signed like a $2.7 million contract on 2 years. So, I mean, you know, he's a pretty cheap piece of the puzzle there.
No doubt.
I alluded to this earlier this week with the Saints, but does anybody remember Tim Hightower's career before he was with the Saints?
He was with the Cardinals, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was semi-decent with them. He played for a couple years and then just kind of fell off the face of the earth. New Orleans, and he kind of resurrected his career, and now he's playing on a pretty decent deal. I forget where he went, but he signed a pretty decent contract somewhere else. So the Saints got Adrian Peterson, who has classically been a better player than Tim Hightower, on a cheaper deal. And all he needs to do is fill that Tim Hightower role, which is literally just to spell Mark Ingram. And it's funny because a lot of people have been talking crap on that move, but I actually think it was a really good move for the Saints because they don't need Adrian Peterson to be the number one guy. They don't need him to carry the ball 25 times a game. They just need him to get those short yardage runs. They need him to get those red zone carries, and that's exactly what he's good at. We know he's going to be good at that. Like, there's no – he's still going to have the power run ability to not be taken down easily. He just may not have the burst he used to have in his early career. So I think that the Saints made a really great move, as much as I hate to say it, but I think that they upgraded that position while letting Hightower walk out and make more money than they were willing to pay him.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think a lot of people are thinking he's going to start and that it doesn't make sense, but, you know, you're right. It could be the same, similar to if we drafted a Fournette with Stewart,
mm-hmm.
and actually Fournette is the first and second down back, and Stewart's the third down back. I'll tell you, that sounds intriguing, no doubt. Take some pressure off of Cam. Well, I do want to give a shout-out to one thing that's happening. We did not have a show last week, but we did have some big news. We re-signed K'Juan Short, so I have to give Gettleman his props for that. Well done, sir. Well done. Pretty decent deal, too. Anyone concur?
Yeah, I thought
it was a pretty good deal.
When they came out that K'Juan had told his agent to just get it done. He wanted to stay with Carolina.
Yeah. And he wasn't going to let a Josh Norman.
Carolina. He's clearly at the moment the most viable pass rushing element to the defense, because Mario Addison's probably second, but Mario Addison's not a three down player. So You managed to get K'Juan Short back on a deal where most of it is front loaded as well, which means that I believe he's going to make $40 million his first 2 years, which a lot of people are like, that's a lot of money for a defensive tackle. But now you have the flexibility to backload Star Lotulelei's deal and potentially keep them both for the next 4 or 5 years. So I really liked the deal that they gave to K'Juan Short.
Yeah.
They're not going to pay those two guys $30 million a year if they extend them both. They're going to be splitting it up a little bit, and I like that a lot.
Yeah. All right. So, back to the old big board here. What'd you guys think of my Zay Jones pick at number 64? Would you take Zay Jones at 64? Or Alvin Kamara?
I would have taken Jones.
He's just been impressive every time I've watched, when he was at the Senior Bowl, is he a junior? He was at the East-West Shrine game? I think it was the Shrine game that he tore up. Plus, just everything I've seen, the guy's just got great hands.
He was at Senior Bowl, I think. Hold on a second.
Was it the Senior Bowl?
Yeah.
Senior Bowl, yeah.
Well, the best part about that pick, while he looks that up, is Zay Jones doesn't have to be Carolina's best receiver. They have Greg Olsen, they have Kelvin Benjamin, who hopefully rebounds from the mental mistakes he made last year. They don't need Zay Jones to be the best receiver on their team. They just need him to be a more Ted Ginn / Philly Brown type player. And I think he would fit that role perfectly. And even if he needs some time, they have Russell Shepard and Charles Johnson who can fit that role in a pinch for them as well. So I think that Zay Jones would be a really great pick as far as the long-term aspect of it, and I think he could make an impact day one if he comes along nicely enough after training camp.
Yeah, Jones did go to the Senior Bowl. In fact, I was thinking about it. He and Cooper Kupp were the two that all during the week before the game they were saying were tearing it up. And then Jones just outshined Kupp in the game itself.
Yep, I think that's what I remember. I think I've already said the pick that I think would light the blog on fire would be Jonathan Allen if he slid because of his health concerns. And Gettleman just like, best player on the board by far, going to take him. Oh, man. I don't know know where we'd put Jonathan.
If the Panthers don't trade up and grab Garrett, I think Allen will be a good consolation prize, to be honest, if that happens.
Yeah. But, geez, just the investment and you'd have at defensive tackle.
But Allen can play multiple positions, too. Like his,
yeah,
his
that's
best
true. He
comparison
could be a,
has been bet.
Yeah. Third down
his
defensive
best comparison
end.
Has been, yeah, his best comparison has been Michael Bennett. And even then, you say, okay, well, look at Carolina. They've got a bunch of defensive line. But you look at the NFC South. Every team has a franchise quarterback. Every team has some good receivers. Every team has a pretty good or really good running game, and every team has a few good defensive backs. What Carolina has that the rest of the NFC South wouldn't have in that scenario is a really, really, really strong defensive line rotation. And that's a really bad thing for teams that have franchise quarterbacks.
Well, we'd have two number ones and two number twos invested. Oh, no, three number ones. What am I saying? Starr, Butler, and Allen, and then the Kawan Short with the big dollar contract. But, hey.
If somebody falls, I hope it's Adams from LSU.
Oh, yeah. I'd be ecstatic if Adams fell to eight.
I think more likely is the Malik Hooker could fall, be there at number eight. I've seen several of him falling into the teens. I don't know, man.
Well, there's so much shine on this, you know, his potential, but I think as it gets closer and closer to the draft, people are thinking, do we want to spend a first-round draft pick on a player that's played 1 year?
Yeah, or a top-10 pick anyway, yeah. You know, once I think it gets a little easier once you're down in the middle of the first round. But shoot, you just, you know, so much pressure to not whiff on a top 10 pick.
Well, the nice thing is Carolina is in a position where they don't have to address any particular position. Like they don't have to have. They're not in a situation where they need to draft a quarterback, or they need to draft a wide receiver, or they need to draft an offensive tackle, or they need to draft a pass rusher, yada, yada, yada. They're in a good enough position where they can actually take the best player available for their team, and that guy's going to help out, instead of having to deal with those situations where you're so, like, you need somebody for a certain position so badly that you may reach on them, where Carolina doesn't have to do that. They're one of the rare teams in the top 10 where they don't have to take anybody in particular.
Yeah. So, Durst, looking back at your big board, you got Cam Robinson as in the middle of the first round, I guess, there with the double question mark. Is that, I'm trying to see, that's, is that character concerns?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say whenever there's something questionable about, you know, maybe their background or, you know, it's different than their health, which is the plus symbol, which is supposed to be a cross, but
more of a health.
So Cam's, of course, you know, he has the character concerns from this time last year when he was arrested and, charged with the marijuana / gun that was in his possession. But he's, you know, he's been my number one offensive tackle since this time last year. And, you know, although I kind of flirted with the idea a few times of putting one of the other guys ahead of him, I've kept Robinson up there. And,
I totally forgot about that. I mean, maybe that's why nobody's got him in the top 15.
Right. His arrest.
I mean, that was a pretty bad charge. I mean, I don't know how he probably got off with it, probably, but still, man, it's one thing to get caught with a joint, but when you get caught with a gun, too, it's like, dude, what the hell? Who are you hanging out with?
Yeah, we've seen this kind of stuff before, but.
Yeah, we have. Yes, we have. He's not wrecking any motorcycles, but, you know. But I, you know, so let's talk. I'd love to see us take two tackles in the middle rounds. But let's, you got one, two, you got four of these guys in the third. You got a whole bunch in the fourth round. Who do you like out of all those?
Well, Adam, you know, William Holden. Yeah, William Holden, I don't have really high, but he's kind of an intriguing guy. The guy from Vanderbilt, he kind of seems like maybe he can play, you know, some multiple positions, and maybe he's not an outstanding athlete, but I kind of think that he. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe just a hunch about him that he could work as well into a swing tackle for a year or two, and then maybe lock down a starting role. Some of the guys are kind of finesse. Adam Dawadi from Pittsburgh, maybe a little bit more finesse kind of players. I don't know if they really have the power, but you know, given an NFL weight program in a couple of years, and maybe that. Yeah, maybe that improves. Zach Banner scares the crap out of me. He's the 6'8" son of Lincoln Kennedy, and he just has no mobility at all. And that, you know, everybody knew that before the Senior Bowl, but he certainly showed it during the Senior Bowl. Antonio Garcia's got a really nice tape against Clemson, and frankly, it's probably about all I've really seen of him. Was a lot of people, going into the Senior Bowl, a lot of people thought he was going to be one of the guys who just came out shining, but I think his arms measured a little short. He was a little underwhelming at the Senior Bowl, and he just sort of hung in there as a mid-round guy. But Antonio Garcia is probably one of the best, if not the best, athlete amongst the offensive tackle class. And for a project player, he would probably be pretty hard to beat in maybe the top of the third round.
Hmm. Well, I think I brought up the whole Mike Mayock, Cam Robinson thing before I got you on the line. But what do you think of him suddenly? You know, he had him as a guard. And then suddenly now changes into tackle. It just, you think he just finally realized he was being stupid?
Well, he never played guard in college football, but, you know, he's a left tackle all 3 years, and probably started just about every game he played. But, I guess I can't blame, Mayock too much for doing that, because I kind of did the same thing with a lot of guys like Lael Collins I had as a guard, and what's his name, Brandon Scherf, the guy from Iowa that went to Washington. I quickly penciled him as a guard, even though he was pretty much a lifetime collegiate left tackle. So, there's a lot of guys, if you just don't think they can hang on the outside, then, okay, let's kick them in the guard, and especially if you think they're a strong running run blocker, and you think, they're a power player. I never did that, though, at camp. I kept him at the offensive tackle position for, to the duration, I guess you could say, and part of that probably is because who else are you going to put out there? I wanted to kind of get maybe Ryan Ramczyk as a, maybe considered him as a OT1, but, he had that hip surgery, and of course, he was just a one-year starter at the collegiate, or at least at the Division I level. And then, Bowles is a little bit overage. Garrett Bowles for Utah, he's, what is he, like 25 or something like that? So he's overage. He has a couple of little minor, character concerns as a young guy, but sounds like he's kind of matured out of that. But again, basically just a 1 year at Division I and a little overage. So it's really hard to put either of those guys over Cam, given Cam's resume and the SEC blocking just a 20 big name guys that's come and went, all the way into the NFL. He's blocked them all.
Yeah. I don't know what you guys out on the line think.
Somebody nobody's talked about is Forrest Lamp. And I really like him to come to the Panthers. He could be back up at both guards and both tackles. And besides that,
and maybe center.
Well, I was going to say besides that, he would be the eventual replacement at center. He would be a perfect replacement at center, in fact.
Hmm. He's played center?
No, but with his size, his strength, he bench pressed 34 times. He's 6'4", 309 pounds, perfect size for a center. Maybe a little tall, but with, he's got short arms, so that hurts him at tackle. But he could come in and be backup at both tackles, and he, if we lose Norwell, he could plug right in at Norwell's slot. And then when Khalil retires within the next couple of years, he could move right into the center spot.
So what you're saying is you love Lamb.
Yeah, I do. If he slid to the second round, I'd move up to the top of the second round. I'd trade to get that first pick in the second round to get him. If he fell that far. Or if, like we were talking about before, if the Panthers pull off a trade with Cleveland where they end up with that first pick in the second round, that would work perfect.
Well,
really just depends on how the tackle class falls as far as the draft goes, in my opinion. Could see a run on him early in the draft, could see a run on him towards the end of the first, so really just depends.
Yep.
We know a lot of NFL teams need help there.
Yeah, definitely. And this...
Oh. Sorry, Brian.
Well, just quickly, since you asked that, I was just saying you know a lot of NFL teams need help at offensive tackle, and so even though it appears to be a very weak class, maybe some guys that should be considered guard might be in contention to stay at left tackle or offensive tackle. This is such a need there across the NFL.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things where you just don't know based on how desperate teams are to find somebody they can plug in there. So Lamp could be a guy where you look at him in the first round. He could also be a guy where you look at him in the back end of the second round. Just depends on how much of a run we see on the offensive tackle class and the offensive line class in general. So I think CP was plugging Lamp as the number 8 pick. If he was, he would be happy if we grabbed Lamp at 8, which I was a little bit shocked about.
I think most people put him in the mid to late 20s.
Yeah. You're saying trade up from 40 to grab him, huh?
Well, I'm saying if they were to do that, I wouldn't be upset. I'd
well,
hate
the
to trade up that.
There.
There's been several people talking about trading back in for a second first-round pick. I don't know who else you'd do that for. Maybe a wide receiver.
Yeah, I think we talked last show that you could package our two second rounders and get up to around 22, 23, 24, something like that. But you're right, I'm not
sure. It's not just a player.
Yeah, I'm just not sure
who
we...
It's not just a player, but it's a fifth-year option.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, the fifth-year option is something that Gettleman clearly loves.
Yep.
Like I said, it'd almost have to be a wide receiver, else maybe if they were looking at tight end with Njoku was still there, so something.
Or one of the tackles, besides Robinson, maybe the Bowles kid or
Ramchick.
Ramchick, yeah. So, stick to number 8 and get the BPA and then trade up for a tackle. This tackles just always seem to get overdrafted. So maybe they'll
that's
be aggressive
this
year.
That's because tackle is a position where literally probably I would say at least half the league needs somebody to be better there. There's just such a dearth of talent at that position in the NFL right now.
And they're the guys that are protecting all your money that you spend at a quarterback position.
Yep, we saw that last year. We saw that last year. Cam Newton got his crap rocked so many times that he was ineffective coming off an MVP year. It's true. It really is. Like, you want your high-end quarterback to perform, you got to protect him. And teams are going to overinvest in that.
And he got shook. Isn't that what Rivera said? He got shook.
Yeah.
Those were his words. Yep. Shook.
Yeah.
Shaken, not stirred.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't stirred. He got shaken up quite a bit, even from week one.
Well, you know, seeing how, you know, if he feels that and then seeing how that derailed our season, I would hope that we would invest in some tackles in this draft.
It's not
early
in the off.
Yeah?
I said we kind of did in the off season.
Well, I mean, one guy.
Hey, that's not true. Amini Sillitolu was the primary left tackle backup back a couple years ago.
I forgot about the Sillitolu factor, yeah.
Played tackle in college, Sillitolu.
He did. Mm-hmm. So, I forgot about that. Of course, I don't know, maybe Darrell Williams is ready to step in and be a player. That would be nice. But I would like to see a couple draft picks. No trading up. Keep the 7 picks. Get you 2 tackles, 2 defensive ends, a couple DBs, and a wide receiver. Call it a day.
How many players do you actually think they could bring in that would make the 53-man roster and the practice squad?
That's always a good point.
Five
is usually around the number. So
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that was the point that somebody brought up that I was actually – it really kind of shook my thoughts on the draft. But you think about it, last year the Panthers ended up drafting Bo Sandlin, Zach Sanchez, and neither one of them actually made the final 53 after the offseason. And, yeah, you know, you look at the team and say, well, they're picking in the top 10 this year. But – the roster is relatively close to the same group that made the Super Bowl the year before, aside from Josh Norman, and James Bradbury appears to be on pace to being one of the better corners in the NFL. So it's like, okay, we hold on to all 8 picks we have or whatever. I think it's 8 picks. Don't quote me on that. How many of those guys are going to stick at the positions they take unless, like, Carolina really focuses in on another position again? Like, what if they take, like, 2 running backs and 2 tight ends. So, you know, it's tough. Like, you got to – that's part of why I like the fact that Dave Gettleman seems to be exploring the idea of trading up, because it's just like, why not trade up when you know that those guys later in the draft may not make the team?
Yeah.
And just to let you know, it is 8 draft picks.
Yeah, it is.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
I'm sure we'll package a couple of those and move up somewhere. That seems to be his MO. But hell, we got 4 picks already just in the top 100, I think. Shit.
I do have one question for you guys. I don't know if anybody saw it, but Jabril Peppers, he got tested negative. They say negative, but it was that his sample was diluted.
This
week. Yeah. So you're sitting there with the Panthers first pick in the second round, and Peppers manages to be there. Do you take him?
I wouldn't. I'm not a big Peppers.
I'd probably lean to – I hardly consider him. I do think he's a little bit of a project. I think he's been kind of hindered by – you know, being moved around too many times and not being able to, to focus on one position. So I think he's, he may be a year or more away, but I think he helps you on special teams. He gives you a chess piece that you can do some things with, but eventually I think he just settles in at safety and probably strong safety or essentially the, maybe like a big nickel kind of safety.
Yep.
And in this scenario that I'm hypothetically speaking of, Obi Melifonwu is not there either, just because Melifonwu provides that the same kind of skill set that Jabril Peppers has, minus the superior athleticism. But the reason why I mentioned Peppers is simply Carolina has Kurt Coleman right now, who is basically a lock to start at whatever position they decide to play him at, most likely free safety. So you got Trey Boston and you got Mike Adams. Trey Boston's inconsistent. Mike Adams is, let's be fair, old. So I look at Jabril Peppers as a guy where you capitalize on the skill he has now, which is that he can attack the line of scrimmage. He can attack in the run game and make tackles behind the line, but his pass coverage skills are still a work in progress. You play him as like a early down player. So looking at that, I would love to see Jabril Peppers in the second round, all because of a diluted drug test where he supposedly tested negative despite the fact that he may have been sick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I'm not that big of a Peppers fan anyway, but I'd rather, you know, maybe even wait longer if you're going to be in that position and get somebody like, what is it, the kid from Utah, the safety.
Marcus Williams.
Williams. You could probably get him in the third or fourth round.
One thing I will warn about, and this is in all of sports, be very careful on buying on a player that does not fit a role that is identifiable to the NFL. It's the same thing with Christian Laettner, Brad Sellers, any player that has all these multifaceted roles, but they don't fit a role that can be tangibly transferred to the NFL. Jabril Peppers really wasn't a playmaker as a secondary player. He made plays as a linebacker. He was adequate. He made plays as a returner. I would be extremely cautious on getting a player that just on film, there is no film of him showing playmaking ability and instincts as a safety. And safety is all about being Johnny on the spot, being instinctive, and being in the right place, something he has never shown.
Good point.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, I thought myself as sort of being one of the people who didn't like Peppers, but that's when I thought he was going at number 8. So, well, you know, now all of a sudden at 40, you know, it's a little bit more palatable. So while I do agree with that, there is a certain point, and you just have to kind of figure out at what point are you willing to pull the trigger. And I think he's worth considering at 40, but when he was being talked about as, you know, a top 5, top 10 player, then I was completely echoing what you were saying.
My counterpoint to that is Shaq Thompson, because most, from what I gathered reading about Shaq Thompson early on in his career, and obviously no player is the same as any other player, so I'm going to get that out of the way right now, but Shaq Thompson was largely considered to be more of a safety prospect than a linebacker prospect up until the draft, and as far as Peppers goes, you're right. He doesn't demonstrate the necessary instincts at the moment to be a safety. But at the same time, you know, he's got really good playmaking ability at the line of scrimmage as far as run support goes. In fact, I read that he wasn't that great as a linebacker in college. He was more so a better player at safety, but playing up at the line of scrimmage. And the reason why I could get behind that pick is using him in a situational role until he's developed a little bit as an early down big nickel or strong safety who plays up by the line of scrimmage, because that's where he excels. That's where he wins right now.
I think when they picked him, they were looking at him like a Thomas Davis down the line. They really saw Thomas Davis in.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, like Shaq Thompson and that one kid, Sua Cravens, I think was his name, plays for the Redskins now.
Yeah.
Same situation. Like no one was able to project him to be a certain position in the NFL, but they found a way to make it fit. And I'm not saying that, like, I think that Jabril Peppers will be this and this in the NFL. I'm just simply saying the guy's a heck of an athlete, and if the team thinks that they can fit him somewhere and make his role work, why not try in the second round?
guess I just had the feeling like was being said about the instincts being instinctual. I'd almost rather see him move to offense than playing defense as a returner and a wideout.
But the nice thing about a guy like that is he can still do that, and you can transition him into a more dependable and more full-time role on defense as well. I mean, we saw it with Charles Woodson, Deion Sanders, you know, Patrick Peterson even. Like, that, like, their role on offense doesn't have to be affected by what they do on defense. I just have seen that he is a very good run defender, and he's very aggressive at hitting the screens and hitting the perimeter runs and getting in there. So I think that, like, day one, the guy has the ability to make an impact simply because he can play the run so well on the perimeter.
He'd be a great linebacker if he was 30 pounds heavier.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And see, this is kind of where I was going with that, because I'm in Michigan. I watched, like, every Michigan game. And the thing that jumped off that really I kept asking myself is, what's going to happen when you match this guy up? You play New England. These guys are aware this is a 5'10" corner safety that has questionable cover skills. They know how to isolate him. If you think that you're going to put him in there in like a nickel maybe role, in those type of roles, they're going to find him. And this has to be a belief. You just have to believe. You have to have a lot of. You believe he can do it other than you see tangible things when you see. That's all I'm saying.
But the nice thing is that Carolina doesn't have to have him play as the primary nickel option either. They have Captain Munderland this year. And really for the next 4 years. So Munderland is there in those obvious passing situations. I just simply presented Jabril Peppers because he can be there for those situations where you're dealing with say Seattle in a 2-wide receiver set with Jimmy Graham up there, where you don't know if they're going to run the ball. You don't know what they're going to do because they're in a typical personnel set where they can run a whole lot of different things. And Jabril Peppers has that ability to really attack the line of scrimmage and attack the perimeter run game, where Captain Munderland, despite his obvious strengths as a nickel corner, is just too small for that. So in the big nickel situations, Jabril Peppers can be a real contributor.
But if you were going to spend that much revenue on that draft pick for somebody to work them into that position, why wouldn't you spend the same pick and take Buda Baker, who plays that position already and excels at it, and he'd be there at the same spot?
And that's a very real question. I was not saying Jabril Peppers is a better pick than anybody else at that spot. I just simply brought him up because he might fall a little bit further than he should.
And I bring that up probably because I don't like Peppers. So take that
and
as you will. You know, I just don't. I don't see a place for him.
I am not here to say that anybody's wrong. I just wanted to bring up that topic of conversation because I felt it was worth discussing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And the fact that Melifonu, Peppers, and Baker, you know, probably two of those three are going to be available at number 40, or, you know, I shouldn't say probably, but I certainly think one of those three is very likely to be there at number 40. Two might be there. That's just kind of why it's hard to think about Adams at number 8, even though I really like him at that position. It's hard to think of Hooker at number 8 because, you know, you got those three guys that are probably going to be there at 40, and then you got Marcus Mays, Justin Evans, Marcus Williams, you know, later on, and you know, somebody like Eddie Jackson did a lot of what Peppers did, and, you know, he broke his, I guess it was his femur, you know, Eddie Jackson's from Alabama, and he could be there maybe at the end of the, or beginning of the fourth round.
Yep.
I really like Obi Melifonwu because, from what I've seen of the guy, he just sounds like a more athletic version of Cam Chancellor. So, obviously, if I'm sitting there looking at Jabril Peppers and Melifonwu, I would want Melifonwu because we have Kurt Coleman already who played free safety. You get Melifonwu, who's a faster version of Cam Chancellor, that automatically provides immediate dividends for Carolina. So, That's not at all. I was not at all getting at like John Woo or Peppers over this guy. I was just saying, in a certain situation, you got Peppers sitting there where there's no other safety prospects, where you look at him and say, "Hey, they're better," you know. But I would love to get. I would love for Carolina to grab Melifonwu at number 40 if he's there. I would love that because that guy seems like he's going to be the next Cam Chancellor.
Well, I would say that he is very athletic, and he probably won the combine with his athleticism. But we've talked about this on the radio before. I don't think he brings the physicality to the position of strong safety that I would like to see.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Goose on that, but you know, the athletic abilities may trump that. Yeah, but yeah, he's not quite the heavy hitter that Cam was. Yet.
Yep. Let's see, I got John on the line here. What's up, John?
Good evening, Jill.
Been patient. We got 15 minutes left, so a lot to talk about, but I don't know. You've been kind of asking everyone the one question tonight is you're buying McCaffrey at number 8.
Well, I believe that the Panthers will probably have the option of Fournette or McCaffrey because I believe the quarterbacks will go early, and I would not be shocked to see the Panthers come back into the first round possibly for someone like Cam Robinson. I just believe that this draft, particularly early, is going to be about making Cam, taking pressure off Cam. He is your most important player. Something like that would go a long way. I don't really care. I tend to go with Fournette as a running back, but McCaffrey and a big tackle that can block, what else can you do for Cam? Fill in a possible tight end. I'm just saying, I do believe that a running back is going to be 1 or 2 at 8. I really do. Unless, obviously, somebody drops that you can't not take. With all of it now, it's just one big guess. That's about all I got to say about it because I don't really know. I'm just speculating.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the end, you can't really grade, like, you know, Durst's board because if he says he's got someone in the second, they get picked in the first, doesn't mean they're necessarily worth the first round pick. You still don't know how they're going to pan out. So, you know, but we're still going to do it anyway.
And one thing you have to remember, too, is that every team's draft board is going to be different because there's certain players that are going to fit their scheme better than others. And, what I was going to mention as far as the Christian McCaffrey / Leonard Fournette thing is I think that if a team is going to take a running back before Carolina, it will be Fournette, and I think it will be the Jaguars because the Jaguars have a very versatile option already in Denard Robinson, where Carolina, really their closest thing to that is Fozzie Whitaker, and he's been average at best at times in that role. So I think if a running back is going to go before Carolina, it's going to be Leonard Fournette because I think that Jacksonville will say, hey, we already have a guy who can do a lot of what Leonard Fournette does in the receiving game in Denard Robinson, so Leonard Fournette makes the most sense.
Yeah. My only thought is they have Chris Ivory and Yellen. I guess neither one of those guys is really a lead back.
Yeldon may have time, but Ivory is on the back end of his career at this point.
Yeah.
I thought the Jets might look at Fournette, too.
That makes more sense to me, is the Jets.
They need a quarterback.
Pair him up with Forte. Yeah, it's true. They could very, very likely end up just taking a quarterback because that's what the Jets usually do when they need a quarterback.
Yeah. And they're still searching.
Yep.
They're terrible at drafting quarterbacks.
Good old Geno Smith didn't solve that problem for him.
No, he did not. So, I don't know. I see the Jets passing, but instead going like a running back. Well, we're down to 10 minutes. Let's see. I got a couple more questions here about the big board. I could see us taking this so deep in defensive back. I can't see us not coming out of this draft with a defensive back. My God, there's so many of them. I mean, Durst, you have a ton. You have, like, the whole board is full, except for the first round. Well, early. Let's see. No, first rounds. It's a ton of cornerbacks. It's like you got, yeah, you got every single spot filled but one for cornerbacks. Just a huge year for
cornerbacks.
Where's he
got Shaquille Griffin?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Shaquille Griffin, where's he at on there?
Oh, the Central Florida?
Yeah.
We're doing fifth round.
Yeah, that's why I'd like to just go there. He could play safety or cornerback.
Yeah, it seems like we've had a kind of history of taking corners right around the fifth round. It seems like we've done that probably like three times in the last, 5 years or something. So it's there's some guys you could definitely get around there. I know you're kind of a fan, Goose, of Jeremy Couturier.
Trio from Middle Tennessee State, yeah. I like him, too. I take him there.
Yeah, I have him in the fifth round as well. And
well, I know one position we don't talk much about, but with the loss of A.J. Klein, we seem to draft a linebacker every year or every other year. I could see us taking a linebacker late.
But, you know, they had that one – linebacker, I think he was from Utah, that they moved him over to safety. They've moved him back to linebacker again now.
BYU.
He's at safety now?
Harvey Lange.
It is Lange.
One of them they moved over. I thought it was Bletchin, but that might be the wrong guy. They moved over to safety, and then they moved him back to linebacker.
Yeah. He's got him as an off-the-ball linebacker here in sixth, seventh round.
Yeah, probably my favorite late-round linebacker is Calvin Munson for San Diego State. San Diego State had three or four pretty good players. The corner, DeMonte Casey. The running back, Danelle Pumphrey, and then the offensive guard, Nico Siragusa. So they had, four really solid guys. Guys, it's a late-round sort of backup, maybe inside, outside linebacker. Seems like that Calvin Munson, he seems like a guy that I'd like to get maybe in round five if we don't end up doing corner.
You're picking Rivera's position and his alma mater, right? Didn't he go to San Diego State?
No, he went to California.
Oh, he went to Cal.
Rivera was Cal.
That's right. So, but no, Southern California kid. That's probably a good pick. Might have to update my pick the Panthers draft.
How many pages you gonna get to do there, Jackson? Any as you want. It's your blog.
Yeah, I can go enter one in at the last.
You make your changes tidy.
So So, you know, we were talking about maybe Jake Butt and how we could somewhat, and nobody really said the word redshirt for him, but, you know, certainly he can just work his way up the draft, up the depth chart as he gets healthy. But there's a couple of cornerbacks that kind of fit that. Sidney Jones for Washington, he's a lot of people had him as the second corner. I think at one point I had him as the second corner in this draft. It's hard to see him, you know, still being in the first round. Sidney Jones from Washington. Fabian Moreau for UCLA was considered a very high pick, but then he tore a pec doing the bench press. Sounds like something I would do. You got Jordan Lewis from Michigan, who is maybe the best corner in terms of tape, all last year, maybe the last 2 years, Jordan Lewis from Michigan. But he's short, and he had a altercation with a girlfriend or ex-girlfriend that was physical, and so it's hard to say how far that'll push him down the board and whether or not Carolina would even have him on the board.
You think Sidney Jones will drop back to the 98th pick?
I have him in the second round, and I did a write-up on sort of the three dropping corners, I called him, and that was before Fabian Moreau's injury. So I forget exactly where I thought Sidney Jones would go at that point. I think maybe so the shock since it just happened was maybe I had him in the third round, but I went ahead and put him back up into the second round. He's that good. I think a lot of teams may want to, you know, see if they can get just a few games out of him in 2017 and have him ready to go for 2018.
It'd be hard to take him in the second round to sit out for a year for us, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we got our three starting corners. You know, we got the nickel and then the two guys on the outside. So I think we're one of the few teams that might be able to do that, but –
Oh, I'm not saying he's not that valuable, but with that second round, the two second round picks, we can get people that we could use on the field this year. So, I mean, just for us,
sure.
We've got slots we could use those picks for.
Teams are going to target Worley next year, too. I'm just kind of letting it know. He's going to get the large majority of the targets on the outside. I think teams are going to avoid Bradbury just because he showed some potential of being a shutdown corner. I think teams are going to target Worley, so he's going to have his work cut out for him if Carolina doesn't find somebody who can spell him or even start over him. Not to say Worley's a bad player, but I just see Worley as a guy who's going to take a couple more years to really be a solid starting corner. He showed flashes, but he's also been beaten a few times, so I think the team, if Carolina walks into the 2017 season with Worley and Bradbury as the starters, they're going to attack the crap out of Worley, especially with Mudderland being the nickel corner.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yep. Well, you know, the funny thing about Worley is if we were to get one of those top cornerbacks, I really believe that Worley could play some at safety.
Worley has that skill set. He's a very good tackler. He's very physical. In fact, I don't know if you caught my evaluations of the two after the 2016 season, but Worley is a much more physical player in the run game than Bradbury is, and I think that as a safety, he could do really well. That said, Worley had a few really great plays at cornerback where ball hit the ground or a penalty flag was thrown on somebody else or it was just an incomplete pass where, like, it's not really all that appreciated, but he had some really good plays. Like, I'm not trying to say Worley's a bad player. I just know that if we look at the starting defense right now as far as secondary goes, Worley will be the most targeted player next year. I will count that now.
Right.
All right, guys. We are out of time. So we're gonna broadcast something. Check the blog for Thursday night. Either we're gonna do BTR or I might do Facebook Live through the Facebook site. But I appreciate everybody that's dialed in tonight. Durst and Brian and everybody, we appreciate you. And we'll see you Thursday night, and we'll probably do it Friday as well. So y'all have a good one.
No trading up to number two.
No trading up.
See you guys.
All right, night, guys.
Night.
Night.